On this 16th day of February, 2011, in San Diego, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in the chapter 18, called The Perfection of Renunciation, text number 65. Manmana bhava manbhakto. Madhyaji mam namaskuru.
Madhyaji mam namaskuru.
Mame vaishyasi satyam te.
Mame vaishyasi satyam te.
Patijane priyosi me.
Patijane priyosi me.
Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Purport. The most confidential part of knowledge is that one should become a pure devotee of Krishna and always think of him and act for him. One should not become an official meditator. Life should be so molded that one will always have the chance to think of Krishna. One should always act in such a way that all his daily activities are in connection with Krishna. He should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours he cannot but think of Krishna. And the Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such pure Krishna consciousness will certainly return to the abode of Krishna, where he will be engaged in the association of Krishna face to face. This most confidential part of knowledge is spoken to Arjuna because he is the dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend to Krishna and obtain the same perfection as Arjuna. These words stress that one should concentrate his mind upon Krishna, the very form with two hands carrying a flute, the bluish boy with a beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hair. There are descriptions of Krishna found in the Brahma Samhita and other literatures. One should fix his mind on this original form of Godhead, Krishna. One should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multi-forms as Vishnu, Narayan, Rama, Varaha, etc. But a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that was present before Arjuna. Concentration of the mind on the form of Krishna constitutes the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is disclosed to Arjuna because Arjuna is the most dear friend of Krishna's. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this verse is clearly extremely important. One way you can tell is because it's repeated. An almost identical verse appears at the end of chapter 9. And again, there, that chapter, which is called the most confidential knowledge, culminates in this instruction. I counted, there's seven words in this verse referring to Krishna. Me, man, mud, mam, mom, and me at the end. So there's no question. There's one lecture where Prabhupada was railing against the impersonalists who tried to take Krishna out of the Bhagavad Gita. In fact, there's a famous pastime where Prabhupada really the full pastime occurred when Prabhupada was still part of the Gaudiya Math, and he was running an ashram of one of his godbrothers. And one of the brahmacharis went out and he attended a lecture by this Dr. Radhakrishnan, who later, maybe had already written the Bhagavad Gita. And he was saying on the very verse corresponding to this verse in 9:34 that it's not to the personal Krishna that we have to surrender, but to the unborn, eternal, unlimited within Krishna. And the brahmachari opposed him. He said something in opposition. Srila Prabhupada was very happy with that. And Srila Prabhupada wrote a long refutation of that, which is in a book that is not so well known, called The Renunciation Through Wisdom. If you read that book, there's a chapter that Prabhupada is actually quoting the Bhagavad Gita of Radhakrishnan and giving page numbers. I have that book. I have that. Prabhupada is going on and on about it. So this is the importance of this. Now, why is it so important? Yeah, you can have a seat there, Bruce. We'll get you, Bruce. One may now ask, well, what's the point of all the other instruction? Isn't everything summed up here? And indeed it is. But the reason why you find that Krishna is going through so many other explanations, this is at the end of the whole book. This is almost at the end. So he's discussed Karma Yoga, Chapter 3, Jnana Yoga. He's discussed Dhyana Yoga, Chapter 6. So many other instructions have been given. And so he's given the so many other instructions in this Bhagavad Gita. And the idea is that Krishna is showing how he's speaking in the Vedic culture. He's in 5,000 years ago. So among those who are interested in elevation, who are interested in pursuing a path to a higher existence, there are many. There are those who are completely absorbed in work, and they understand to some degree the process of sacrifice. So Krishna speaks the words about karma yoga to bring those into the realm of his of bhakti, gradually. In other words, he's speaking to everyone here. This is the Gita Upanishad. It's a summary of all the Upanishadic wisdom. And so he's also speaking to the yogis, those who are the dhyana yogis, those who are familiar with that or attracted to that discipline. And then at the end, of course, he says, but the greatest yogi is the one who always thinks of me within his heart and his devotee. Every chapter ultimately comes to the point of bringing one closer to pure devotion. And now he's saying very, very clearly, if you understand this verse and you follow this verse, then you don't have to worry about all the other instruction for yourself. But because part of devotion, because Krishna is so eager to help everyone, this is why he comes to part of devotional service is to give devotion to others. Therefore, it's important to be familiar with the rest of the Bhagavad Gita. But as far as our own practice goes, the karma yogi who is working very hard and giving part of his wealth to as sacrifice, but is not absorbed in thinking of Krishna all the time. That's not a platform that we should aspire to. That's a platform we want to graduate from, to the point where we're, as Prabhupada says very nicely in this purport, one should mold his life in such a way that 24 hours he can't but think of Krishna. That's samadhi. That's full absorption. That's full yoga, you see. So that's what he's speaking about here. And this is the most confidential knowledge. The most confidential knowledge in all of the Shastra is that, Vedaischa sarva ahameva veja. That I am to be known by all the Vedas. I am the compiler of the Vedas. I am the compiler of Vedanta. And Vedanta means the end of knowledge. So this is the platform upon which the rest of the literature rests. The Bhagavatam begins from this, immediately kicks out all cheating religions. The second verse, Dharma Projita Kaita Rotra. And is wholly and solely concerned with Krishna Bhakti, and Krishna avatars, the delineation of Krishna's Leela in all forms, his different incarnations, and especially Krishna himself in the most attractive form, the original form of Krishna with the two hands and the flute and in Vrindavan. That's the heart of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. So, and what to speak of further literature, the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Srila Prabhupada gave us, the writing of the Goswamis. They're not speaking about trying to bring people from karma yoga, they're talking about the higher realms, generally speaking, of devotion. And the world, the whole world that opens up of Krishna Bhakti. We have a world here. It's very complex, The spiritual world is no less complex. But everything there is saturated with this pure bhakti, with spirit. There's no material, as Prabhupada, inebriety, covering, imperfection there. So, this is the doorway to it. This verse, this understanding. Always think of me. Now, I remember a nice little explanation of Rishana Chakravarti Thakur, one of our great acharyas. This is where Krishna says in the 12th chapter, if you can't do this, do this. He begins, You know, always think of me. Maya Saktamana, how's it go? Maya Aveshamano Yemam. Which is the best? Arjun wants to know. The impersonalist or the personalist? Tell me for certain. You know. So, oh, the personalist. Maya Aveshamano Yem Nityugma. Shuddhiyapadiyopetastimayugtitama. With full and transcendental faith to always be thinking of Krishna, to have the mind fixed on Krishna and engage in devotional service. That's the best platform. But everyone can't immediately come to that platform. So if you can't do that, then practice devotional service, the principles of devotion, and you'll get a desire to attain me. It all depends on your desire. But if you can't do that, then work for me. Karma yoga. Work hard. You may not be always thinking of me. Give as much of the fruits as possible to my service. In this way, you'll gradually come into the realm of devotional service. And even if you can't do that, at least don't be a selfish, egotistical person and give in charity. And who knows, you come across a devotee, you'll give in charity even unknowingly, and that'll be the beginning of your devotion. You know? So he's very liberal there. But there's no question in the 12th chapter that, you know, absorption of Krishna is everything. So that's the end goal. Manmana. If you can always think of Krishna, you know, your life is perfect. But it may not be possible. So therefore, mud bhakta. Become my devotee. Sadhana bhakta. You put yourself under the guidance of the spiritual master, following the authorized shastra, and in this way you'll gradually come to the point of always thinking of Krishna, and always engaging all your senses, mind, intelligence in the service of Krishna. Well, you may not be able to do that. So at least worship me. You know, come to my temple, worship me as you can, associate with the devotees. And in this way, you get a desire to practice bhakti, you know, take up the chanting of Hare Krishna, and eventually come to the point of always thinking about me. And if you can't even do that, then just bow down. Namaskar, there's a certain progression there. You notice the progression. They're progressively easier, you know. Some people can't even bow down. Bowing down is, how do you, is such a thing. On this side. You know. Bowing down is a big deal in this culture. No one bows down. You know, even the pauper is proud of his penny, Prabhupada would say. There's a certain saying. So, but, you know, to bring oneself to come before the Lord and bow down, even if you can't do anything else, this is all auspicious and gets you, you know, into the train of these three. But the point here is that these are, you know, essential practices of devotional service. And now Krishna promises, there's a little difference here between the last instance of this verse and this one. Let's go to 934. I think you'll see it's a very similar verse. In fact, the first line is identical. Whenever you see a repeated verse, you know it's very important. Please, take a book. Yeah, so here is, yeah, so there's a little difference. We'll read it together. So the second part says, Mame Vashisi Yukvaivam Atmana Matparayanaha.
Right?
Yeah, so engaging in this way, the word yukva, of course, recalls the idea of yoga. You know, yoga requires effort. Atmana matparayana, you are, because your soul is devoted to me, matparayana. But here, Krishna is offering a promise. And the whole idea of Arjuna being dear to him, this is a different platform. You know, we want to become dear to Krishna. The whole process is simply trying to become dear to Krishna. We're already dear, but we want to reactivate that or revive our awareness of that and act in that capacity. So here, it's very intimate, really. You know, this is confidential now. This is intimate. Satyam te pratijane priyosime. Priya means you are dear to me. I promise you this. I promise it. So promise of Krishna is good. The best thing. So then in the purport, Prabhupada talks about you know, how to remain fully, you know, thinking of Krishna. So, we have so many ways. The holy name is the main way. You know, it's such a simple thing, so esoteric. But it's essential in this age. You know, the idea of yoga, it means dhyana vastatatangate namanasapashantiyam yogina. Prabhupada would always quote this. What does yoga mean? This is in the 12th canon. Dhyana avastata tadgatena manasa pashyanti yam yogina. To always see Krishna within one's heart. You know? It's not easy. This is the process of going to the Himalayas. Probably, he outlines it in the 6th chapter. Controlling the breath, controlling the mind, complete celibacy, completely alone. You know? Nobody's going to follow that in this age. Very, very few. So how is it practical for us to come to the platform of always seeing Krishna? Always thinking of Krishna and seeing him within our heart and working for him. It's a puzzle. And that's why if you just take the Bhagavad Gita if you just pick it up and read it, say just the translations. I did that when I was searching in the early 70s. There's this little book, the Penguin Bhagavad Gita. It couldn't have been more than 200 pages, maybe 150 pages. Just the translations, maybe a footnote here and there, you know. And the translations that Prabhupada said are basically accurate. And Sanskrit is easy here. But you come out of that scratching your head. You know, how am I supposed to follow this? What's the ultimate meaning of it, you know? And I don't think anyone became a devotee from reading the Penguin Bhagavad Gita. You know, it went beside the other books, the Be Here Now, and, you know, Evans Wentz, and all kinds of stuff we're reading, Gurdjieff, right? There are all kinds of wonderful books we're reading. And you come out of it, well, maybe you're a little more spiritual, maybe you become a vegetarian, but it's very fragile. You know, yeah, in my youth I dabbled in that, but now I'm much older, you know, and I got other stuff to do. But this, you know, Prabhupada was on a mission, as Krishna's on a mission, to actually save people, to bring them out of the thrall. The thrall is a control of illusion. So the platform of reality, platform of light, of happiness, of peace, eternally. You know, that's the mission of Krishna in this material world and his representatives. So therefore it requires a system. It requires an institution, really, as well as a set of rules and regulations, and people who are following them and who can show them, just like any teaching institution. There has to be a place, there needs to be teachers, there needs to be a curriculum, and there needs to be practices. So that's, Prabhupada is giving us some of the description here, you know, of what it means to be Krishna conscious. Krishna is so beautiful. He's speaking here of the beauty. We're attracted to beautiful things. You know, so we get the descriptions. It has to start with the sound. It starts with the holy name. The holy name is that key, that rope. You know, if we just get to the point of having enough will and enough interest and faith to chant the holy name a little bit, the whole thing opens up because it's direct experience. Krishna has especially empowered that holy name in this age, the avatar, you know, by Lord Chaitanya's grace, to purify the soul. And you get a feeling of the presence of Krishna, of the divine, just by chanting, even with a little concentration. And then if we're fortunate, we'll become interested in the rest of things, and we'll associate with devotees and want to continue the process. So ultimately, there's a vast, you know, description. We live in an age now, you know, and Jadubar and I have, like, of course he goes back several years before I do, but basically at this distance, the 3 years you were in the movement before I was, and that, you know, I mean, they're significant. But the point is that we're looking at you know, 45 years of ISKCON in the West or outside of India. And in that short time, Prabhupada came. What existed really in the West in terms of pure Vaishnav literature? Nothing. Until Prabhupada came, he brought the Bhagavatam with him. Gradually, the Gita manifested in other books, and his amazing output, you know, we have 50 of his books, the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. But now, the books are coming out left and right. There are so many descriptions. Prabhupada's books are always at the center. But, you know, we have the Brahma Samhita, which came out in Prabhupada's time. But we also have, you know, more commentaries on it. We have the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Today is the appearance day of Lord Nityananda. And we had some Leela given by Chaitanya Charitamrita. But Vrindavanas Thakur was a disciple of Lord Nityananda. And he wrote extensively about Lord Nityananda's glories in that Chaitanya Bhagavat. Amazing pastimes. Just like, you know, if you read, I used to read a lot of novels when I was a kid, you know. For to this day, I can remember reading, you know, Charles Dickens and Little Nell, you know, and how she was such a very artistic way of writing, you know. I lived in that book, you know. And when at the end of the book, when she died, tears were coming down my face. I swear to God. You know, but so, you know, the words can take you wherever you, you know, they want to go. They want you to go. So what to speak of the transcendental word? So in Vrindavanas Thakur, in his Chaitanya Bhagavad, he describes some pastimes of Lord Nityananda. I remember, you know, unfortunately, I'm sort of, producing the books more than reading them. But I remember he describes the meeting, this wonderful meeting of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya for the first time. Now, when you understand, when you're a devotee, and you spend part of your life or all of your life serving Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya and spreading the Sankirtan movement, then there's no denying it. You're more interested in these kind of pastimes. But even in themselves, even a first-time hearer or reader will be fascinated. So Lord Nityananda, who is none other than Balaram, and Lord Chaitanya, who is none other than Krishna, they enacted these lila, these pastimes, about 500 years ago in Bengal. So Lord Nityananda, he had been traveling all over India. And he waited in Vrindavan until he heard that Lord Chaitanya had manifested his Sankirtan movement. Lord Chaitanya did not immediately show himself to be the personification of bhakti. He was more the personification of learning when he was growing up as Nimai Pandit. He could defeat anyone, even these, in those days, they had scholars who would travel around the country or around the subcontinent of India, defeating others. This was a pastime. Very learned. They knew so many verses, so many shastra, and they would have these debates. It was a great entertainment, Nowadays, it was played out in the internet and everything. But those days, that was a great entertainment, So there was this one a scholar who was known as Keshava Kashmiri. He was known as a Digvijay. It means he conquers in all directions, right? So he'd been all over the subcontinent, and he'd conquered so many great scholars. So he was very confident. But he heard Nadia, Navadvipa in those days, was a real center of learning. And you had all kinds of people, Nyayakas, those who were very expert in argument, logic, Vedantas, this and that. They weren't really devotees so much. So he came there intending to get a certificate. They would get a certificate. Yes, you have won the debate. I surrender. So this was, he was collecting a certificate, very proud. So he came to Nadia, and he had heard that, this is a center of learning. And he had heard that, and all of the pundits, they hid away. They didn't want to be defeated by him, so he couldn't find them. But he heard that amongst all of them, there was this Nimai pundit, who was the best. So I don't think he knew that he was a boy of 14 years old. But he meets Lord Chaitanya had his own school at that time, even though he was a very young boy. He was so learned that he had his own school of little younger boys, and they would teach them. So the scene is in the evening, the bank of the Ganges, it's very idyllic, and he's sitting there, Brahaspati, with his disciples. And this Keshav Kashmiri comes there. And he wants to know which one of them is Nimai Pandit. And he says, he's such a young boy. And he's not impressed. This is just a boy, some grammar, Sanskrit grammar. I know all of these Nyayic principles and all this. What's going to happen? So, Nimai doesn't say anything right away. So he says, okay, we'll have a debate. Say something glorious about Mother Ganges, who's right there, glistening in the moonlight, very beautiful, And so he reels off 100 original verses in Sanskrit. This is a tour de force. I mean, we can hardly even chant the transliteration properly. He's composing these verses like the wind, Can anyone even do that in English today? So this is quite impressive. It looks like a knockout punch. What can Nimai do against this? So he praises him, very good, very good. But I will now, I have to, I feel I must, oh great Digvijay pundit, I must point out some of the good qualities and the faults in some of your verses. Faults? There are no faults in my verses, So it's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He picks out this one verse that he memorized on the fly. Now that itself is like a hello? It takes us like a day to memorize a Bhagavad Gita verse. Lord Chaitanya on the fly, and these are long verses. These are like not just eight, syllables per line. So he memorized this one verse, and he began to point out these subtle problems with it, a redundancy. Bhavani, what is it? Bhavani Bhartu. I forget.
Wife of Shiva, but then he's repeating that again.
Yeah, in other words, he used a word that means the wife of Shiva, but he described her as the wife of Shiva. Yeah, so there was some redundancy, and then there was a lack of anupras. Anupras is what we call alliteration. The same sound at the beginning of each word. But in Sanskrit, it doesn't have to be the beginning of each word. It can be anywhere. Because it's all this one flow, you know. So he says, oh, three lines have it, fourth line doesn't have it. This is a fault, you know. So in this way, and the Digvijaya, you know, he was just dumbstruck that he had memorized the verse. What to speak of that he could analyze it so well. So the upshot, he was totally defeated. And he was praying, you know, oh, Mother Saraswati, I've served you so well. Why have you abandoned me? You know, like that. So he has a dream in which Saraswati comes to him and says, I'm a servant of this Nima. He's actually Krishna. You know? In other words, you it's no dishonor to be defeated in this way. This is a sweet pastime. So this Digvijaya realized that he'd been blessed actually by being defeated by Krishna. And the interesting thing was that all of Lord Chaitanya's students were ready, you know, were like casting aspersions. You know how kids would do, you know, say, "Ah, you were slaughtered by my friend," you know, and Nimai shut them up. He said, "No, you know, he shouldn't do that because you know he'll lose face, he'll lose all of his spirit that way." And so he encouraged him. He said, "The verses are very good, and even you know, great poets sometimes they have some little defects like that. Like you see Rupa Goswami, he has so much anupras, but sometimes the last line doesn't have so much." So he encouraged him, and in the night he had the dream, and then he surrendered to Nimai. You know,
he slipped out in the middle of the night or something.
Did he? He left in the middle.
I don't remember exactly like how he did. He accept defeat, or he just slipped out?
I think he. He understood. What I remember is that he understood Nimai's exalted nature because he had that dream. But the point was, getting back to what I was saying, is that Nimai had this role, played this role as like an arrogant scholar. He would meet the devotees on the road, and he would begin arguing with them, you know, and defeating them. And they would say, "Oh, Nimai, if only you were a devotee, you would be the greatest devotee. You know, you're so beautiful, you know, so attractive. But don't waste your time with these Smriti Shastras and all this nyaya stuff, argument." And Nimai would say, "Oh, by your grace, by your blessings, I'll become a devotee." He'd meet Srivas and others, you know. So anyway, he went to Gaya and he came back and he was initiated by Ishwarpuri. So then he manifested his Sankirtan mission. Lord Nityananda comes down to Navadvip and he takes shelter in Nandanacharya's house. Which is right near where we have our land there in Mayapur. And Lord Chaitanya told, "Okay, I know that a great personality has come now." He didn't say who it was. Somewhere, I sense that. "Go out and find him." So the devotees went everywhere, but they couldn't find Nityananda. Said, "Lord, we've been to every house, we can't find..." He said, "Now I'll take you." So he went straight to Nandanacharya's house, and they had this meeting. It's such a wonderful description. They were both stunned in ecstasy. You know, Nityananda, Balaram, was seeing Krishna, you know, his beloved Krishna. And what happened was that Lord Chaitanya, he asked one of the devotees, I think Mukunda, in a sweet voice, to chant a verse, you know, about Krishna. So he chanted this verse, Barhapidam natavadavapu karnayo karnikadam. It's a description of Krishna in entering the forest of Vrindavan, you know, with lovely pika plume upon his head, and fragrant flower placed upon each ear. He enters Burja's woods with graceful tread, a handsome dancing actor without peer. His golden yellow raiment brightly glows, his splendid garland reaches to his knees, and from his luscious lips the nectar flows and fills his flute with charming melodies. As Krishna thus begins his blissful day with coward friends who sing his glory sweet, he beautifies Vrindavan's forest way with fine impressions of his lotus feet. So this is what he heard in Sanskrit. And immediately Lord Nityananda started to manifest all these ecstatic symptoms. And, you know, chanting and dancing and falling down and perspiring. And they couldn't restrain him. They were trying to, you know, stop him. But he was so powerful in his dancing. And the only time that he was, when Lord Chaitanya embraced him, he became completely quiet. You know, he stopped, you know. So it goes on like that, and they just praise each other. And in this way, you're absorbed. Just by your listening to that, You know, you're seeing an image that you're thinking of Krishna. You know, and this is like just one little pastime in a whole series and a voluminous book, the Chaitanya Bhagavat, describing Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, and his wonderful devotees. You know, so this is how we can perform yoga in this age. This is yoga. To hear and chant the holy name, to hear and chant the holy sounds, to associate with the devotees, and to be purified in the heart so that we, you know, study and deliberate. Remember, Krishna said, deliberate on this philosophy. Don't just in one ear and out the other, you know, but deliberate on it and apply it to our lives. It brings to mind the teachings of Lord Kapiladev, our Giriraj Gopal Prabhu, who loves Lord Kapiladev's teachings. And by his influence, I delved back into those teachings, and I discovered that at the beginning of those teachings, there's the Sadhu Sangashtaka. Most of you haven't heard about that yet. So what Kapiladev does there, his mother is his disciple. You know, his mother takes the role of disciple, and Kapiladev, who is her elder son, he's actually an incarnation of Krishna. So he begins by speaking to her about how, you know, we come to this world, we're full of attachments. Itcha dvesha samotena. You know, we grow up and more attachments come by sangha. The very word sangha, which means association, also means attachment. So he describes there, prasangam majadam pasham, atmana kavayo vidagu, saheva sarashukato moksha dvaram apavatam. He says that this prasanga, these very powerful attachments, they're just like ropes. Ajadam pasham. Atmana kavayo vidagu, that the wise souls, the kavis, know that the soul, the atma, has to redirect these attachments toward the sadhus. And this opens the door to liberation. Why is that? He'll explain in a few verses. But first, if you follow his argument, then the question say, okay, I'm willing to give it a go. Then the next question is, who's a sadhu? What, how do I know? You know, I may direct my attention towards someone who may be so-called sadhu or claims to be a sadhu, and I just get cheated. They just take my money and go away, as Prabhupada would say. So, here's the criteria. Tatikshava, Karunika, Sudidaksarva Dehina, Ajata Shutta Vakshanta, Sada Vakshada Bhushana, Mayanam Nena Bhavena, Bhaktim Kovanti Hedrinham, Matkriti, Chakta Karmana, Chakta Swajana Bandhava. Here's the criteria. They're not easy to meet. The first thing is completely tolerant. Tolerant of physical difficulties and mental and emotional. Means that, like Arjuna, he couldn't tolerate at the beginning. That was the first instruction, basically, Matas Parshas. He says that he couldn't tolerate the idea of killing his relatives, his friends, his guru. That was too painful to contemplate. He had to tolerate that in order to be a devotee of Krishna. So that's tatikshava, karuniga, but also merciful. In the act of giving mercy to others, meaning giving them knowledge, giving them the holy name and prasadam, nothing material. You have to be tolerant because people don't like it. They're in Maya. You know, they attack you. Prabhupada was the example of Jesus Christ. He was just preaching God consciousness and they crucified him. So one has to be tolerant. And friend of all, sudidaksarva dehinam. Having no enemy means that you feel no enmity toward anyone, even if they feel enmity toward you. These are the ornaments, the very wonderful qualities that ornament a sadhu. But there's no mention there of bhakti. That's in the next verse. Mayananena bhavainam bhaktim kurvati yedvidham. Very strong, determined devotional service to me. Working for my benefit. Matkute chaktakarmana is giving up all other activity to work for me. And even giving up, if there are impediments, if it's an impediment, relationships with friend and family. This is the mention of the sadhu. Now, what happens in that association? He goes, Taheva ksadavak sarvi, sarva sangha vivarjita, sangha steshadate pratya, sangha dosha harahite. That in that association, it all depends on association. We have to associate. Either we're going to associate with sadhus or mudhas. So he says, My dear mother, O Sadhvi, one has to search out this association of those who are free of association, free of Sangha, Sarva Sangha Vivarjita, free of material associate, pure devotees. By that association, one will get free of Sangha Dosha. Sangha Dosha Harahite. What is the Sangha Dosha? It is the faults that we have that due to previous bad association. This comes up in the Gita also. Nirma Namoha Jita Sangha Dosha. This is the process of surrender. 15:5, I think it is, or 4. So, all of us, by being in the material world, we acquire so many unwanted things. Unwanted desires, memories, fears, anxieties, doubts. These are all within our consciousness. They have to be cleansed away. So he says, Sangha Dosha Hara. This association takes that association away. How does it happen? Satam prasangam. Mama virya sambhito. Bhavandirit kana sayana katata dosha narashu abhavargavad shadharati bhaktaranukumis. This is a key verse in the Bhagavatam. By this association, it fits right in with this verse here. Manmanabhava manbhakta. How to come to this platform of thinking of Krishna becoming his devotee? By association with the other devotees. By pure devotees. Now, notice that the word prasanga comes in here again. The whole ashtaka started with prasanga. Prasanga, that's bad prasanga. This is the intense desire and attachment to this material world. This is satam prasanga. Intense and meaningful association with devotees. What's going to happen? Mama virya sambhido. You're going to hear vibrations, conversations about me. Kapila speaking, it's Krishna. My powerful activities. And that, Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Kata, acts, that kata, acts as a life-giving elixir, purifying the heart, pleasing the heart and the ear. What is it? Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana. The heart and the ear. This Rasayana is like a life-giving elixir, you know. Awakens the soul up. And Tadjoshanat, following this process, in other words, just sitting and hearing, that's the yoga process. You don't have to pranayama, you don't have to push the nose, you don't have to perform severe, just sit in here. That's what he's saying. This is the yoga process he's giving to his mother. Easiest process, he says. Next verse. So what happens? Apavargavartmani, this is a path of liberation. We should be concerned to be liberated from this, you know, prison house. What develops Shraddha, the faith in Krishna? This was Prabhupada's great gift. He came, and those who were willing to hear him, and this, believe me, this satsanga includes kirtan. That's the most important association, is hearing and chanting the holy name in the association of devotees. But it also includes this, what we're doing here, and what Prabhupada gave. So he instilled faith. By his enormous and pure, powerful faith, he instilled that faith through his words and his whole being. So shraddha, rati, attraction to Krishna, and bhakti, devotion, they develop step by step by this process. So last two verses in this sadhu sangat. So bhaktya paman jata varaga ayadvinya drishta shatan madvachanana chintaya. So he says, by this process, bhaktyapaman, a person develops detachment. You know, this is the detachment. Detachment is essential. We're bound hand and foot, you know, or more importantly, by our consciousness to this world of birth and death. Don't you want to become detached? It means getting cutting those bonds. That's what we're talking about here. The bonds are in here. There's nothing physical. It's all the consciousness. So it's bhaktya, by the process of bhakti, puman, bhaktya puman, jata viraga, aindriyad. One gets free, the senses become detached from their objects. Which ones? Drishta shrutan. Ones we have seen ourselves and experienced, or seen others or heard about. This refers to being attracted to go to heavenly planets, or being attracted to achieve some higher position in this material world. Most people don't know about the heavenly planets, but they know about San Diego. They know about California. They know about the USA, right? Or they know just about, you know, getting a better position in this world. That's all shritan. You're detached from it. You're self-satisfied. So it says, chittasya yato gahane yoga yukto. In this way, being engaged in yoga, you know, the mind is controlled. Chittasya yukto. Yes, yatishyate vrijubhi yoga margai. This Rijubi means easy. What could be an easier process? Is this, you know, opening the door, sitting down, and listening with these sadhus. It's very difficult when you're compelled to go to some other association, of which they're unlimited. Right? The internet, the TV, the bar, the club, anything else but Krishna, right? Which comports with the modes of nature you're in. So here, I don't even think there's a dozen of us. You know, this is it, in a city of 5 million or 4 million, whatever it is. Okay. Maybe some people are, you know, at home reading Bhagavad Gita. But the point is, it's just a handful. But this is what it takes. And so it's Rijubhya Yoga Marga. And finally, here's the final result of these of this association with sadhus. He says, asevayayam prakate gunanam gyanena yogena vijimbitena bhaktya arpita mam evam ivavarunde. Some of the words are leaving me, sorry. But what he's saying essentially there is that thus, not serving the modes of nature, by the strength of one's knowledge, detachment, and yoga developed in this way, and devoting everything to me, one will achieve me, one will realize me, the absolute truth. This is Kapila speaking, an incarnation of Krishna, in this very lifetime. So, it all starts with this sadhu sangha. And in that way, we can come to the point of thinking of Krishna, manmana, and become his devotee, and become inspired in all these ways. It comes naturally. So, the sangha, the most important sangha, is with Krishna. You're associating with Krishna through sound vibration when you associate with his devotees. But even without his devotees, sitting alone on a desert island, or, you know, at home somewhere, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Those two means of associating, kirtan and japa of the holy name of Krishna. You're associating with Krishna through sound, most important way. And that sangha is most purifying. So that's... And if one comes to the point, through this sangha, through this process, of thinking of Krishna, always becoming his devotee, etc., you know, then Krishna promises that he'll take us back to Godhead. You know, the fact of the matter is, if you're able to do this, you're already back to Godhead, even in this lifetime. You know, if you're always thinking of Krishna, we saw with Prabhupada, he had two levels of existence. He was dealing with us, he was writing his books, and inside he was always with Krishna in his eternal relationship. So, we have a few more minutes. Any questions on this verse? Very important verse, yes.
Purport Prabhupada is saying that concentration of the mind on the form of Krishna constitutes the most confidential part of knowledge. But we are told we should focus on the sound of the name Krishna, holy name Krishna, and not try to focus on the form.
Yes.
So, I mean,
the name is a form of Krishna. Factually, if you perfect the chanting, you'll realize the form. Nama, Rupa, Guna, Lila. There's a progression just from chanting, you know, that the form will become clear to you and manifest. And then the qualities.
You should not try to do rupa. You should not try to concoct some form.
We should focus on the chanting, but it's not that we should ignore the rupa. We should come before the deity and become absorbed in seeing the deity. That's, you know, that's part of our process. To see the deity properly from the feet and so forth, you know, coming to the smiling face. There's nothing wrong with that, but as you point out, our primary form of meditation is on the sound. But when you see they're not different. Prabhupada's quoting from the Brahma Samhita. So if you're chanting, okay, you know, Venam Kwananta Madavinda Dalaya Taksham, you know, am I seeing the form? Yeah, I'm seeing the form of my mind's eye. That's a description of the form, and the deity was carved from those kind of descriptions. So it all kind of fits in together, you know. That's the idea.
One more question I have is that Krishna is saying, Pratijaya, I promise. But in his past time, there's some problem with his promises.
In what?
In his past time, especially in Vrindavan, there's some problem with his promises.
He promised not to fight on the battle, but he took up his chakra.
And he promised to the gopis coming back, so, you know, just going for a day or two.
Yes, but he ultimately kept his promise. The thing is that, he also said to Arjuna, you declare it that my devotee will never perish. And you can think of it like this, okay? This is a promise that's being repeated by his pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada. He's not going to, follow that promise. And his breaking of the promises and his cheating, and his stealing, this is all part of his leela.
Some of the commentators, some of the acharyas say that POC may part, he's adding it. He's trying to tell you, no, I want to cheat you because you're very
good.
Believe me, my promise, this promise is.
But the thing is, he cheats, cheating the gopis, they're as dear or more dear as Arjuna. But ultimately, he's not cheating. It looks like cheating, but this is the paradox.
It's more like a joke.
Yeah. Okay, we should adjourn. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.